Hello, everyone, and welcome to Oh, a Podcast, the podcast brought to you by O-Rock Studios. My name is Paul Franzen, the editor-in-chief
of GameCola.net. No, you're doing it completely wrong!
I know, I was supposed to say the podcast about playing games and making games. Brought to you by 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, O-Rock Studios.
I'm Paul Franzen, and I'm the head boy of O-Rock.
And I'm Michael Gray, and I was just fired from O-Rock.
That's okay, you're rehired.
Okay, good.
Well, I don't want to have to write all the games myself, so it is what it is.
Well, you just stop making games after, like, the two or so games I've written in advance. It'll be good.
That's true. I can make it a little while, I guess. How's it going, Michael?
It's going okay. I suppose it's, I don't know. I can't think of any witty comment to make based on the time of year it is.
Yeah.
It hasn't snowed yet in January. It was very sad. We were promised snow, and then there was no snow. Like, there's a little bit of snow on the car roof, and that was it.
I'm more than happy to share any of our snow with you. We've had so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yes, so next time I dig myself out of 2 feet of snow, I'll just ship it right over to you.
Okay, sounds good. Sounds good.
Well, I am very sad, Michael. I'm very sad.
Oh, dear.
Because I'm not in Disney World anymore. I'm very upset about this state of being. And not only am I no longer in Disney World as I was a couple of weeks ago, I am now as far away from visiting Disney World again as I may ever be. In a week, I'll be a week closer to visiting Disney World, but that is not the case right now.
Interesting. So, is anything new or different about Disney World? It sounded like there was some sort of new Star Wars thing there that... Okay, cool. Let me know what this is.
Yes, yeah, so you went to Harry Potter World, right, at Universal Studios?
Yeah.
So it's that, but Star Wars.
Okay, so you've got two rides and 12 stores.
That's actually pretty accurate, yes. But it gets better. You have to get to the park at 6 a.m. if you want to ride one of the rides.
Why?
I said it gets better, didn't I? Whoops. So they're doing this whole weird thing with their big fancy ride. I think it just opened in Orlando, like, a month or two ago. It just opened in California, like, a week ago. So it's brand new. And there's so many people that want to ride this ride that they had to come up with this convoluted system for getting people on it. You have to be in the park, like, physically in the park, and then push a button on the Disney app in order to get added to basically a big wait list that'll tell you when it is now appropriate for you to get in line and get on the ride.
That sounds a bit like a scam to get you to download the Disney app. I don't know.
And if you don't do this, like, right when the park opens, you've basically lost your chance of riding that ride because all the spots go so quickly because everyone wants to ride it.
That's interesting, because I seem to remember when they opened the Star Wars World, they were complaining nobody wanted to go there. It wasn't as many people as they expected. So clearly everybody was just waiting for this one ride, okay?
I think that you're actually not wrong about that. I mean, the ride, I don't want to give too many spoilers about it, but it's definitely like this wildly immersive ride. Like, it was as much of an effort as it was to just get on this stupid ride, it was worth it.
Wow. Okay, so you did actually get to go
I
on
did, yes,
that
yes.
fancy ride.
It was funny. So we were traveling in an enormous group. We had 13 people, family members and friends, on this trip to Disney World. Four of us made it onto the ride. And that's because most of us didn't want to get up at you know, butt o'clock in the morning.
You couldn't, like, just steal their phone and do the app for them.
Because the thing that activates, it's not just the phone, it's not just the app. You also have to have scanned your Magic Band or your ticket or whatever. You have to have scanned a thing to get into the park. So I would have had to, like, collect all their Magic Bands and surreptitiously, like, put them in front of the reader without anyone noticing me doing it in order for that to work. And then they wouldn't be able to get into the park because I'd have their Magic Bands. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was awesome, and the Disney Star Wars land as a whole was incredible. There's also a Millennium Falcon ride that you get to ride, and it's like this co-op flight simulator adventure where two people are like the pilots, two people are the gunners, and two are the engineers. And I'm happy to say that I did not completely crash and wreck the Millennium Falcon during my trip, although it wasn't great for a little while there. I should not be flying anything, it turns out.
Any sort of spaceships. Okay, because I was going to ask, is there... This is probably a dumb question. Do they have Star Tours in Disney
yes.
World? Because I know they had it in Disneyland for, like, the past several decades.
They do, and it's not, like, part of the Star Wars land. Like, it's in the same park, so this is all in Disney's Hollywood Studios, which is one of the four parks at Disney World. It's all in that park, but the Star Tours ride is still kind of separate from the rest of it, which is weird.
That's weird, because I remember they revamped Star Tours a while ago, but that must have been before Disney bought Star Wars.
Yeah, they revamped that ride, I think, basically whenever a new movie comes out, they add the new planets to it. So I think it's pretty up-to-date, like, with stuff from the ninth movie, whatever the one was that just came out.
Okay. Well, yeah, I don't know. The one they had in Disneyland didn't seem to change at all.
Oh, no.
when they made the new movies. So I'll have to look this up. Gosh.
I didn't actually make it onto Star Tours this time because I spent too much time with the other Star Wars stuff. But yeah, the other thing I wanted to mention, speaking of immersion, like, there in the Star Wars land, or sorry, Galaxy's Edge, it's called Galaxy's Edge. Like, there are actual, like, stormtroopers wandering around, and if you catch their eye, they'll, like, approach you and demand to see your identification, and start giving you a hard time. Probably the funniest moment of the entire trip was, when they started walking toward my wife. And she just, like, turned and ran in the other direction. It was just funny, like, watching her, like, bolt and weave through crowds to try to get away from these stormtroopers, because she did not want to interact with them. But the other thing I like in regard to the immersion is that the theming of Galaxy's Edge is that you're on the planet Batuu, which is a new planet in the Star Wars universe that was created just for this park. And they have, like, specific... like slang and terminology that the people who live in this planet uses. So I was reading about this online and it worked. If you, like, approach the cast members there and say bright suns, they'll say bright suns back to you, because that's the way of greeting people in this world. Or if you say till the spire, that they'll respond in kind. Because that's how you say goodbye on this planet. And there's, like, secret passwords you can use, too, to indicate that you're a member of the Resistance with a secret, like, it's like a call and response kind of thing. It was just very, very cool. Very happy with it.
Yeah, interesting. So I'm looking here in Disneyland. They redid the Star Tours 2010. So it was closed from 2010, and they reopened it with a totally different ride. Same okay, basic yeah. idea, but in 2011. So they switched to 3D. The new
okay,
version's
yeah.
3D, and Darth Vader's in it, as opposed to him not being at all.
That's right. There was the previous one. A big overhaul of the ride like that, I guess. Yeah, like a decade ago. But I feel like they also do minor updates, just like I said, to add new destinations and stuff like that. And it. It's supposed to be random each time you ride it, which three planets you end up traveling to as well.
Yeah. That's what I heard. Whereas because, you know, I grew up on the one that's obviously mm-hmm. before 2010.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was just the same thing every single time where, like, you crash into an ice asteroid and then for some reason you blow up the Death Star.
Yes.
And you were just trying to get to... you're just trying to get to Endor to play with the Ewoks, but yep, we had our captain, which was just kind of a screw up. No, I was gonna say, I went to California's Great America, which has a ride called Mass Effect New Earth, which is the Whoa. Same sort of thing. You basically you've got 3D glasses and you go to these other planets and fight aliens. Except in this one, you have like a I guess you'd call it a cast member, somebody who works for the company, is playing the role as the captain and performs it live.
Yes.
Whereas in Star Tours, they had an animatronic character as the pilot.
Well, that's something that's really cool about the new Star Wars rides, is that they have some live actors.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I want to be back there right now. This is why I am sad. Oh, what are you going to do? Anyway, I could talk about Disney World for the entirety of this podcast, so I probably shouldn't let that happen.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no, apparently we should. What's up?
No, it's just saying there's just a gajillion different, like you said, ride sequences in the new Star Tours.
Yeah.
So apparently it's got like five or so different segments, and each one has five or so different variations. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds like you need to make another trip.
Yeah, I got the one with Darth Vader. Okay, so I got version number one. Cool.
Yeah, I think, too, whenever they update it with new planets, they, let's see if I remember this right, they set it so it's not randomized, so that people can experience the new planets. Like, everyone who rides the ride gets to experience the new planets for, like, the first, like, week or month or something like that, which I think is kind of an interesting way to do that.
Okay, so, yeah. So that's where we are on the Disneyland update. Disney World update, sorry.
Oh, Victoria Budke's going to be so mad we didn't invite her for this one.
Oh no.
So what's new in game development?
What's new in game development? Let's see. Not much has been going on. I've just been busy with other stuff. You know, doing a walkthrough for the Nancy Drew game, which came out last month. And I need to write my review for that and doing everything wrong with video for that. So
oh, no.
Those would be my next two big products or projects.
Can you give me a sneak preview? What are some of the things that are wrong with it?
Oh, you will hate this. So messing up all right with all right.
Mm-hmm. Come on. Look, I just got my brand new edition of the Associated Press Stylebook. I got it for Christmas. All right is two words. It says, quote, never all right. One word. Never. Never, ever acceptable.
I'm trying to figure out where she said... Oh, yep, yeah, no, that's the second line of the game.
Oh.
That's all right, Miss Drew. I'd prefer to stay out here. And they spell U-H-M. Is that normal?
I've seen that before. I think I've used that before, but I don't think I do anymore.
Well, I do U-M, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, U-M feels more correct.
Well, what's weird is I've seen apparently the British version is ER. I've seen books.
Sure.
I compared the American and UK editions, and they switched from to
Really?
It's like our character is just stammering. You don't really need to correct that.
Oh, that's so interesting. I wonder if they do that in like the Harry Potter quote localizations, because I know they make some changes like that.
Yeah. But they only did that for, like, the first three books anyway. They stopped.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I guess you're right, yeah, because I've definitely heard... I listened to the audiobooks many, many times, and I've definitely heard the extremely British narrator say boogers, and he always sounds so weird and uncomfortable saying it, because it's bogies in Britain. It's not boogers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think I've heard him say bogies, too, so anyway.
Yeah, they changed the bogeys part. Like I said, I think book four is when they stopped localizing the books as much.
Oh, that's so interesting.
And I noticed that because that's book four. That's when they start using Q instead of line.
Oh, okay.
Because they had to queue up to get water at the Quidditch World Cup. So let's see what else. Nancy, for some reason, like during the intro tutorial part, all the phone conversations are muted, and I have no idea why. I guess I have to check with somebody else to see if it's just my version of the game or not, but I don't understand it either. Let's see, what else is wrong with the game? Yeah, I could nitpick on grammar all day. they do the thing where, like, if a word is in quotes, the end quote appears on the next line in the text box.
Oh.
So that happens far too often. I mean, it doesn't happen every time you have quotes, but it happens enough that's like, ugh, why isn't it just like the other games where the text box is a standard size?
Oh, that's weird. It sounds like the engine like isn't recognizing that the quotation mark is part of the word or something. But it doesn't do that for like periods, right? Like it doesn't have a period on a new line.
Oh, now or I'm gonna have to check. I don't think it does. Yeah, no. I think it will keep the period on the same line and then the quotation marks on the next line. I don't know.
Yeah, see that's one of the happy things we don't have to deal with by using RenPy. RenPy has figured out all that kind of stuff for us.
Yeah. Oh, I was going to say, another fun one is whenever you talk to a character, like the last line of dialogue that was said out loud appears at the top of the dialogue box.
Okay.
I guess if you're talking to a character for a second time, the last line of dialogue that was said appears. But so I saved my game. You know, I quit the game and reloaded the game and started a second conversation with somebody. So the game didn't know what the last line of dialogue was, so the dialogue box just said, last line.
Oh, jeez. Oh. Weren't you one of the testers on this game, Michael?
I didn't test that part.
Just saying.
No. Yeah. They took my feedback into consideration. So I didn't have any feedback about the text box.
Oh, well.
I don't even remember if their text box was visible. It's been a while.
Sure.
But yeah, so those are some problems I'll point out and everything wrong with. I'm trying to decide whether just to nitpick at the text box all day long or actually just ignore it.
I guess it depends on how long you want to make this video.
Yeah, it does. It does. Here's another example. Like day number two, it's just a weird decision. There's a conversation at the kitchen table. It's got Nancy, the Hardy Boys, Deirdre Shannon, and May. May says one sentence during this entire conversation, and this is like a 5-minute conversation, but she's on camera the whole time because she had that one line of dialogue. Meanwhile, Deirdre Shannon, who talks for most of the she's half in frame.
Oh, that's weird. Okay.
So I thought that, I mean, it's something. Even when I was just playing the game casually, I'm like, what is with the framing for this scene? Oh. So let me get an actual time for how long that conversation is. Okay, yeah, it's about 5 minutes. 5 minutes and May's in frame the whole time. Luckily, you can move the camera around all the time. Or most of the time for the game, mm-hmm. You can move the camera around whenever you want, so it's no big deal. Weird thing, though, so I was trying to move the camera around to get Deirdre in frame. And I noticed if you move your camera all the way straight down, so like you're looking on the floor, Frank Hardy disappears.
Okay.
So, but his watch is still there. His watch is just floating in midair, but he himself is just completely disappears when you move the camera at a specific angle. So that's clearly a glitch.
Do you think, are you seeing, do you think, more glitches in this game than in previous Nancy Drew games? Or is it about the same?
Gosh, it's hard to say, because it's a different style of glitches. Like, obviously the first games had some pretty bad glitches, but...
Sure.
It's interesting you say that, because I worked on a speedrun for the game, and I kind of wish I could understand the glitches so I could exploit them. Because there's this one glitch at the start of the game where you double-click on a drawer as it opens, and for some reason it turns the screen upside down for like a half second. And so the next phone call you have just completely skips. The game just skips over a phone call, which shows up like about a half minute later. So the game just pretends that phone call doesn't happen and just goes right into the scene, which plays after the phone call.
Right.
So that I don't know how long that saves, like 20, 30 seconds, but I'm like, oh man, if we could figure out how to replicate that glitch anywhere else, or like replicate it whenever we want, we could probably use it to skip phone calls and puzzles, but I don't know what causes it. I don't know why it doesn't seem to happen every single time.
The worst kind of bug.
I know, right? But I'm sure there aren't, like, that many people who were playing the game. It's like, okay, I'm double-clicking. It's just because I was speedrunning.
Right. And I guess they didn't do much speedrun testing. Which, why yeah. would they? You're probably the only Nancy Drew speedrunner. No, I'm sorry, there's someone else on YouTube, right? I think we've talked about him before.
Yeah, no, there are, like, four or five people.
Oh, I stand corrected, yeah. Have you ever been approached by, like, Good Games Done Quick to do a Nancy Drew speedrun as part of their...
I have not. I've been in contact with the... I think I mentioned I was in contact with the Speed Demos Archive, right. Who put... I don't know if they still put on Good Games Done Quick, but... anyway, I've submitted runs to them. My new speed run for Nancy Drew Midnight in Salem was actually sent to them. I'm in the process of them judging it and determining whether or not it's good enough to be on their website. I think I finished all the stuff on my end because right. there's a problem with them being able to see it. So, or you know, they have very specific rules for and a very specific encoder. Probably just to make sure nobody's cheating. I think that must be why they do it, and that's why it's so strict. But, yeah, I would love to do one of their things. They just never take place anywhere near me. So, other video game development news.
Yes.
Is I just got art for the Kidnapped Prom Queen finished, so
cool.
I got that, got it sent in, got it approved and everything. I don't know what the next step is. I think I just wait for them to get back to me at some point. But I sent them the art, so yay. Two different people, you know, checked it and said it was okay, and so I officially commissioned somebody to make all the different versions of that art.
Oh, yeah.
And I sent the person's, you know, name and where all the various pictures came from. So there are like three pictures in the, and they're all from CC-O sites. I think that means copyright something.
Creative Commons Zero. I think that means public domain.
Okay, yeah, it's basically public domain. Okay, we're good. Also, what's interesting is I don't think the person who did the artwork played the game. I gave them a copy of the game. But I also gave them, it's like, here's what some of the other testers suggested for the artwork. And somebody's like, okay, well, you could just have one thing for each of the three people that get kidnapped, because there's three basic storylines.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you get to vote for who the prom queen is. Whoever you pick ends up being elected, and then she gets kidnapped. And so there are three different choices. So I believe one is a cheerleader, one is... your best friend Elena, and then the other one is a person you don't really know, is Claudia Barrett, who is captain of the debate team. I should remember my own game, but I don't, I guess. One of the testers suggested, like, okay, well, you can do a different thing for each of the three ones, so like a pom-pom for the one cheerleader, and then a one for the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the person ended up going with a picture of cheerleaders, and then just a random people of somebody in a prom dress, by a car, just a couple in a prom outfit, and then a picture of some woman being kidnapped.
Okay.
I didn't know there were kidnapping pictures that were public domain, but like, there's a lot of them. There's a lot under similar photos. I do not like this at all. Oh. But yeah, I was a little worried that it would be rejected because it's somebody with their hands tied up and her face is dirty and she looks very unhappy.
Yikes! It sounds awful.
Yeah, so I thought it might be too graphic for you know, the iTunes store or the Google mm-hmm. Plus store. So that's why I ran it through the people in advance.
And they were like, this weird, dirty kidnapping picture is okay?
Yeah. Okay. They're fine.
Well, I'm seeing some very strange pictures on Pixabay searching for kidnapping.
Oh, no.
Oh. I don't know how I feel about all of these. Oh, some of them are just aliens kidnapping people. That's fine.
Oh, that's safe, yeah.
There's a pig that is had his feet all tied up and duct tape on its mouth.
Why would they kidnap a pig? Oh, dear.
I don't know. Oh, man. I don't want to look at this anymore.
Well, I was going to say, one of the interesting things is, I'm trying to figure out the best way to put this. So the picture that was used for the kidnapper, it looks like it's taken from a group of cheerleaders. But anyway, it's an African-American woman who's the cheerleader, which I thought was interesting because in the actual game, the character's named Nancy. She has red hair because it's Nancy Drew. Okay, I was just being silly. But now according to the box art, though, she's African-American, so... That's kind of interesting.
Are you gonna change the story at all to match the box art?
I'm not sure if I can.
Is it too late?
Because I submitted everything to them, and then the box art was the last thing. Yeah, so
I guess you'll find out if somebody complains.
I guess very diverse game. I don't think that's something we've done so much with the Ouroch games. I know
that was actually something I was going to talk about in a little bit. Let me pivot while we're talking about this. I know it's early, but I have a listener question that ties into this.
Oh.
Yeah. So this is a question that was left over from last month that we didn't get to. This is from Holland Palmgren, and I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly, Holland. She wants to know, what do you look for in casting real people as characters? Any unexpected surprises in the casting process? And it's interesting that you bring up the diversity in our games, because that's something that does come up a lot with our casting.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, because the Kidnap Prom Queen is just a text-only game, so it's a lot easier for me to, say, cast two people are Japanese, whereas in, say, the Cat President, where we're actually taking pictures of somebody, you would have to specifically mention that, right, in the casting call, and that might make it a bit more tricky, because even I know that even when we put out a casting call for somebody who's in their 20s, it could be male or female, even that, something which is just so open-ended, we have trouble filling sometimes.
so that's the thing, right? So that's what I was going to mention, was that when I do these casting calls, I post on our Facebook, Twitter, and our website, and I usually share it on my personal accounts as well. And I usually add something there that says we're specifically looking for people of color. And I think we've gotten, during all of our casting calls across our various games, virtually no non-white people. Like, it's almost always like 100% white people that respond to our casting calls. So that obviously has presented some problems. I think in Cat President 1, I didn't do a great job of incorporating diversity in the game. And in Internet Court, which we're working on right now, I did a very bad job, and I'm actually kind of angry at myself for not casting better for that. But not much I can do about that now. But with Cat President 2, and with Pizza Boy, actually. Pizza Boy, I was able to get a much more diverse cast.
Yeah, it just depends on who sends messages, too. But yeah, you say you get people on Fiverr, correct?
That's where I was going with this, yeah. So when I have an issue with this, when, you know, to prevent the entire cast from being Caucasian, I usually do an additional casting call on this website, Fiverr.com, which, if you haven't heard about it, it's basically just a website where people can post and say, I will do this job for $5, or you can say what you're looking for. So I'll do an additional casting call there, and that usually makes our cast much more diverse. So I've been very happy with how that's working with Cat President 2, and I hope that's reflected in people's experiences with the game. I guess we'll see. To answer your question, Holland, that's one of the things I look for, is that I look to not have the entire game be white people. Beyond that, I feel like I don't actually focus that much on people's physical appearance. Like, as long as the age range seems to be, like, at all close to what we were thinking. Like, the actual physical appearance of the model isn't, like, a huge factor. What's more important is the person themselves, and whether they can follow the directions that I give them, whether I have to send them a bunch of emails nagging them, like, hey, how's the picture taking going? Do you think you'll have them done this weekend? If I have to nag someone, it usually it's not a person I'm going to want to work with in the future. I mean, and this is something that I talk about a lot in this podcast, but that's, yeah, that's an important thing that I look for in someone I want to work with on a project in any capacity, is whether you'll do the thing and you'll follow the instructions that I have provided. Because I can't tell you the number of times, like, I'll say, okay, no logos anywhere on your clothes, and try to make sure you're taking the picture with some natural lighting, because otherwise the pictures will come out blurry. And then I'll get a picture with someone wearing a Star Wars t-shirt, and they took the pictures in their room with the shades down and the door closed and 8 o'clock at night. And it looks awful.
Jeez, yeah.
Yeah, so those are two of the main things that I look for in a model, is diversity and reliability, I would say. As to any unexpected surprises in the casting process, I was actually wondering if you, Michael, could speak to that. Have there been any roles in any of our games that we've published so far where you're like, wow, that's not at all what I thought that person was going to look like?
Gosh, now I'll have to think about it. I was going to say the surprised person in Pizza Delivery Boy saved the world. I think she's only got one picture where she gasps angrily, and that's it. I thought it was going to be, like, a much older person, but no.
Oh. Sorry.
Let's see what else.
I think that's the one where she thinks that Doug is catcalling her. Is that correct?
Yeah, yeah. That was one of the last ones we got, right?
Yeah, yeah. Because I usually end up casting the roles just in order that I'm coding them a lot of times, or at least when I get to the part of the script where I need the photos, that's where I start, like, buckling down and making sure I get the pictures if I don't have them already. So that's one of the last characters you meet. So that was one of the last ones we cast. And if I recall correctly, that was one, too, where the photos had a little bit of an issue with them. You can kind of tell the pictures were taken at sort of a weird angle. I think she's kind of, like, hunched over a little bit.
Yeah, that's it. Right.
So, I mean, that's the sort of thing that happens, you know? Sometimes the lighting weird, sometimes the pose is weird, but I try hard not to send people back for unnecessary reshoots, like, or reshoots in general, if I can avoid it, just because I know it's kind of a pain, especially with the kind of money we pay, which is not a great amount of money. I try not to ask too much of people. So
here, let me pull out the art. Oh, wow. Oh, that's different. Okay, cool.
Uh-oh.
The doctor in one of the pathways
in Cap President 2
has switched genders. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, though. That's what happens in the casting process sometimes. Sometimes, like, you know, we write the characters and the gender that we have in mind, like, it doesn't have to be that gender. It doesn't really matter at all.
It's a doctor, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
A one scene doctor. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
I can tell you exactly. the reason. So this was a someone that I know, and I approached her specifically for the role of doctor because I knew she owned a lab coat.
Okay.
So, what do I look for in casting real people? I look for someone who I know owns the right prop sometimes. Sometimes that's what it takes. And she introduced an even better prop while she was taking pictures too.
I see that.
The glass that looks like a skull. Yeah, I was really happy about that.
Cool. Okay, yeah. So, there we go, right?
Yeah.
There's a good example of the casting surprising.
Yeah.
It's like, that's a different gender from the doctor I saw last time I played the game.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because I just had a placeholder in there before, and it was just like probably the first picture I could find that was Doctor online on Google.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I was gonna mention that. Yeah. To you in my comments, I'm like, this photo's kind of blurry. You can tell it's a different resolution from the one to it. And then I saw, oh wait, the Doctor's placeholder art. Okay, never mind. Yeah. I won't complain about it.
Yeah, that's something you'll see. So I just finished the second pathway and sent it to Michael a few days ago. So there are some placeholders in that one as well. The mom and dad were still ironing out. I think I just used pictures from Pizza Boy for the mom and dad. I don't remember who exactly.
Gosh, I would have to actually like talk to moms in order to get somebody to play the mom.
It's fine. I just purchased a mom off of Fiverr today.
I could get tattoo mom at swim practice.
I got a different person this time. I already gave them the money, so hopefully they send the pictures. That's sort of one of the annoying things about Fiverr, is that you pay first and then you get the stuff afterwards. So there was an incident, I think it was with Cat President 2 actually, earlier this year, where I paid and then the person sent in really bad pictures that didn't work. And then I sort of had to fight because they didn't want to retake the pictures. I had to fight with Fiverr to get my money back.
Aww.
So, hopefully that doesn't happen with this person.
Hopefully. Yeah. Otherwise, it's tattoo mom all the way, I guess.
Well, plus now we have the wrinkle that we do have the dad cast, so we want to try to find someone that looks similar in age range to the dad character. I mean, I guess we don't have to, but...
Oh, tattoo mom would be perfect. It's great.
Oh, okay. All right.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting how parents are cast nowadays. I don't watch like too many TVs or movies, but it's like, yeah, ages don't match.
Well, see, that's one of the issues we run into with casting human models is that, I mean, we have a younger fan base. We just don't have a lot of people, you know, 50 and older playing our games. So that when we reach out and do these casting calls with our fans, we're necessarily going to have a lot of younger people. And specifically, since we reach out to your fan base, the Nancy Drew fan base, we ended up getting like a lot of women in like their late teens, early 20s, which is awesome. But it also makes it a little harder to get a range of people sometimes.
Yeah, if you're a mom. Yeah, exactly. Because the main character's in, what, her 20s or something? Yeah, exactly. Well, it's interesting watching, I guess... the show Fuller House, because it got the kid on the show, who's the same age as my stepdaughter, but, you know, he's playing the exact same age, if that makes sense. It's like, I'm thinking of him as way older than he actually is, because...
Oh, interesting.
Are way younger than he actually is, because they rarely cast somebody playing the exact age. Like, okay, this person's a fourth grader. They actually got somebody who's 10 years old playing the fourth grader. Because, you know, like High School Musical, none of them are high school age. They're all, like, you know, past college age.
Oh, yeah, movies and TV shows about high school are frequently extremely bad about that. Like, what are all these grown-ups doing in high school?
Yeah, also, like the new Nancy Drew TV show, guy playing Nancy Drew's father, he is old enough for the role, but he doesn't look it at all. It's quite amazing.
Yeah, I've definitely heard of things too where like movies will cast like the main character's mom and the actual, you'll look it up and the actual actress is like 6 years older than her or something like that.
Yeah, apparently that was the case. The famous case is the Hamlet.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll have to look it up now.
Well, my favorite one of these is, you know, Moaning Myrtle in Harry Potter?
Yeah.
The actress who played Moaning Myrtle, 37 years old. She was playing a 14-year-old. She was 37. I guess, granted, she was a ghost, so they could hide it a little better, but...
Okay, so the trope on TV Tropes is called Playing Gertrude, and it's named for Hamlet, Prince of Denmark's mother Gertrude, most prominently and ridiculously pronounced in Laurence Olivier's film version of Hamlet. So Eileen Hurley played the role of Gertrude. She was 11 years younger than Laurence Olivier.
Wait, younger?
younger. She was 11 years younger...
That's awesome.
Then the guy playing Hamlet. Now, in his defense, he's like one of the best Shakespearean actors of all time. So He offers to play Hamlet. They let him play Hamlet.
Did he look young at least?
1948, and he was born 1906, so he would have been in his 40s playing Hamlet.
Cool, with a 30-something-year-old mom.
Yeah.
Huh.
Oh, it's black and white. You can't tell.
Yeah, see, the same thing with Moaning Myrtle.
Yeah. It's hard to tell when somebody's either a ghost or doing it in black and white. It's hard to tell somebody's age as much. Okay, so where were we?
I did everything topsy-turvy and did listener questions and messed us up.
We'll just say our actors are all younger than they look. Yeah.
Yeah.
or they're older than they look. How's that?
But I guess I can reverse a little bit and give my quick game updates. Internet Court, I have only a few pages left in case number 3 to code, and then the music after that. That's coming along well. Oh, and I emailed you. I incorporated the feedback from your email about case number 2. Yeah, you were totally right about. I had icons in the game that were in the court record representing fan fiction, and I had icons that were just literal fans, like the kind that blow air on you, and it was nonsense. It did not work at all.
It did not make sense. Yeah, no. So I literally thought they were supposed to be as like, but you haven't played the Legend of Zelda game.
No. It's like, no, I was just like, well, I'll tell you what the problem was. The problem was that I had already used like books and pieces of paper as icons in like the first case. So I was like, well, okay, now what? So I made a stupid pun that didn't make any sense and looked like nothing. So I ended up changing it to, since the fan fiction is sort of a parody of Legend of Zelda, I made him into, like, little sword and shield icons instead, and maybe that works a little better.
That works a little better, yeah.
It's not
perfect. I was going to say, that's something else I'll probably complain about in the Everything Wrong with Nancy Drew is there are, like, 3 keys in the game, and they're all the exact same. They didn't bother to change the inventory
not even, like,
icon.
The color or anything?
Well, the inventory is black and white, so...
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So, I mean, it's like they didn't change anything. It's like all the keys look the same. You have to move your mouse over them to see the subtitle, figure out which one is which.
That's what I was going to ask, if you have them in your inventory at the same time. I guess you do. Well, that's kind of weird. But I guess if you're working on black and white, there's... Well, I was going to say there's not so much you can do, but I guess you could just draw 2 more icons. That
just
look
draw
like
different
keys, different looking keys, or like rotate them or something.
Yeah, that would be an option too.
Anyway, that's it with Internet Court. Cat President 2, I finished Pathway number 2 and finished chapter 1 of number 3 just earlier today. That's going well. I'm trying to figure out if I need to pick up the pace or not in order to finish it before the election. I think I'm okay, but we're going to find out.
The election heats up like a week after this podcast comes out.
Oh, gosh.
We're in like 10 days before Iowa gets to vote.
But yeah, so we'll see. I keep thinking like, okay, there's only 4 pathways left. How long can that take? But then I remember that the bonus pathway in this one is you know, not unsubstantial. Like, and we did a bonus pathway in the first game, but that was a lot shorter. This one's almost a full pathway in itself. So I have to keep that in mind as well. I mean, in like the worst case scenario, maybe I have to release the bonus pathway after, like, as an update to the game. I really don't want to do that, but if I have to, I'd rather do that than, like, release the game after.
Yeah,
the
that makes sense.
Know?
That would be an option on the table.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. I'm still fairly optimistic. Yeah. And I had some fun, so I was working on Cat President 2 while we were flying, while I was on the plane. I'm very curious. I haven't played over that section yet. I'm very curious how the audio editing went for that section, because I was on a plane at the time. And it's sort of hard to hear things on a plane. I half expect I'm going to play over that section, and like the sound effects are randomly going to be like 100 times louder than they usually are. But easy enough to fix.
Let's see, other Cat President news.
Yes.
I don't know if this counts as Cat President news, but I toyed around with an idea for a joke. I don't know if it's funny at all.
Okay.
Is that... if one character just gets a bunch of endorsements from other cats that are desperate to be their vice president. It's like, I'm endorsing you not because I think you'd be a good president, but because I think you're the one most likely to pick me as vice president.
I like that a lot. Yes.
I have no idea where we'd work a line like that into the game or a scene or anything like that, but...
Oh, that feels very real. I like it.
Yeah. Another video game thing I just posted online. So do you know who this character Nabbit is from Super Mario Brothers?
No. I remember the name. I don't remember the character. I did see your picture of the stuffed animal.
Okay, you did not remember the Nabbit character, just the name. So new Super Mario Brothers Wii U, I guess, okay. And then new Luigi Brothers Wii U. So he would have been a playable character in new Luigi Brothers.
Okay, yeah, and he, like, that's, like, kind of a cheaty character, right? Like,
yeah, he was a replacement for Mario, basically.
Yeah. No, but I mean, but there's something, like, he has easy special mode. Abilities. He's invincible, yeah. Something like that.
It's invincible, yeah.
So. Yeah. So, yeah, new Luigi is really hard. So
for the new, for the Switch version of the game, Nabbit's available in both things, because the Switch version has new Luigi and new Mario, just them together.
Okay.
And they also have Toadette, I think, yeah.
So, oh, that's fun.
Yeah, so you get to play either game, but you get to pick up Mario, Luigi, what was the original? Was it like Red Toad and Blue Toad?
Yeah, Blue and Yellow Toad, I think.
Yeah, so it's Mario, Luigi, it's Toad, Toadette, and then Nabbit.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
I'm like, Mario, Luigi, and Toad. I'm like, who's number four? Who's number four? Nabbit? What?
I take no. care your daughter is super into Nabbit. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's a big fan of Nabbit. I played as Nabbit all the time because it's a tough game. So
it's easier, yeah.
It's easier to play as the character who can't get hurt by enemies. Although, the downside being that character's kind of not as good at jumping. So, if there's a level with a lot of jumping challenges, you want to go with either Luigi or Toadette.
Oh. Well, I'm looking at the picture. That is a weird-looking thing.
It is a weird-looking character. I think they kind of messed up its mouth, but... It's just supposed to be a rabbit, so...
It's coming back to me now. I remember Nabbit. Yeah, Nabbit, like, in the original game... in the original Mario, Wii U, whatever the heck... doesn't Nabbit, like, steal stuff from you?
Yeah, apparently, yeah. That's what I read. He steals stuff from you, and you have to chase him.
Yeah, okay, that's what I remember, yeah. Oh, you know what? I'll tell you why I don't remember the name. It's because when Lizzo and I were playing it, we kept calling him Babbity Rabbity, like, from Harry Potter.
Oh, okay.
No, I didn't refer to him by the correct name, so...
Oh, that explains a lot, yeah.
Yeah, of course, you're talking about Babbity Rabbity.
It's just funny when she, you know, in public, when she's got her, like, Nabbit doll, and people are like, oh, you've got a little toy, who's that? It's like, it's Nabbit! Oh, okay.
The heck is that? Oh. I think on that note, it might be about time to wrap up this month's episode. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Paul M. Franzen, and Michael is at Arglefumph, spelled Argle Fumph. You can check out all of our games on Steam or itch.io, or just visit oarock.com for the complete library. Our theme song is Dead Monster by March of the Danger Men. You can check them out on SoundCloud. And finally, if you have any questions about game development or our games specifically, we'd love to hear them. Email them to podcast@oarock.com. And Michael, would you like to add anything else?
Nope, nothing at all.
All right. See you everyone next month.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Fun times. Hey, what about Nancy Drew being dead now?